Hello and welcome to the Design and Marketing Podcast with Rob Cubbon, coming at you live from Brazil. Maybe a slightly different sound to this one, maybe a slightly different feel because I'm in Brazil, I'm not in London. You might hear a few whistles and car hoots coming at you through your headphones this time. But it's all good. We're in Brazil. I'm running my business from Brazil. And the weather is fantastic. Quite a lot to get through in this week's episode. We want to talk about how to run your business when you're abroad. And I'm going to talk a lot about what to do and what not to do. I've also got a book list of things to read because I had a question in my Facebook page that everyone chipped in on, and I want to thank everyone for that, and I want to give you a few of the examples of the books that were recommended to me. But first we're going to talk about travelling. Now when you're travelling, what you have to do, of course, is to plan. You've got to plan everything as like a military campaign, because if anything can go wrong, it will go wrong. And especially when you're trying to run your business as normal, you don't want your clients suddenly finding out that you're abroad and you can't complete their project on time because you're some fly-by-night designer who doesn't really care, and you'll get a bad reputation, lose your clients and what have you. So with that in mind, I laid the best plans I could and I copied everything onto my laptop. I've made a video about how I did that. Obviously, there's lots of ways you can back up all your work. The best way probably that everyone would like to do is to back everything up on the cloud. So you have it on multiple web servers all over the world and you can always access all your work and it's updated. What you do on your computer is then updated on web servers. And that would be the best way of doing it. Unfortunately, it's also the most expensive way of doing it, and I have about 80 gigs worth of work. So at the moment, I decided not to go for a cloud-based solution for my backing up. If I had, obviously, there's Dropbox and Google Drive. They come to mind, and they are actually quite cheap. I just thought, I'm going to put the most important things on the cloud, but otherwise I'm going to stick with what I've got on my computers and the external drives which back up with Mac's Time Machine. So I did that successfully. I copied everything onto my MacBook Pro, and also I've got all the software I needed, all the fonts, anything else I could think of, as well as just the files for my work. And that was actually as easy as it could be once I worked out how to do it. I used a program called Sync 2 Folders for the Mac. But basically, it's just copying all your stuff over and installing all your software. So that's a simple thing. What's the other most important thing when you're going away? Well, it's money. You've got to make sure you've got money. Now, this might seem like an obvious thing to be talking about, but I'm going to make it's going to make more sense when I go on and tell you my story of how I arrived here. So, you're sure you've got everything on your laptop fine, and you've got a backing up device with you. What's the next thing you should do? Should you tell your clients? Well, I would say no. I didn't tell any of my clients. I only told one client, and that was because they arranged a conference call with me on the Monday after the weekend that I arrived in Brazil. So I thought, I really got to come clean here. They don't know I'm going here for a long time. They think I might be here for a holiday. So they're quite pleased that I made the effort to make this conference call, which I managed to do on time, and so that was fine. So I told one client. The rest of the other clients, I didn't tell. I didn't want them thinking I was swanning off to Brazil and to be on the beach all day and not ready to do work for them. I didn't want them to get jealous. I don't know if they would have got jealous or not, but it's just better not to tell your clients where you are and have them assuming that you're locked away in some horrible office somewhere in, or home office in London, and it's raining outside, so you can concentrate on your work for them. And they don't need to know where you are. They just want to know that you can do the work. And that was what I was thinking when I didn't tell any of my clients. So the third thing you need to think about before you go away is money. And what you've got to do nowadays is contact your bank and contact your credit card company and tell them where you're going. Because credit card companies nowadays will block your card at a moment's notice if they see anything dodgy, anything that is different to your usual spending activity, they can block your card. This might happen to you in your own country, and that's bad enough. But imagine having this happen to you in a foreign country where you don't know anyone. So you go there, you go to a cash machine, you try and get some cash out. I made the mistake of asking for too much cash. In the UK, you can get out £300 at a time. They won't let you have more than that on a debit card. So I tried to get the equivalent out in here. I got it a little bit wrong, and it ended up being £309. The transaction was declined because you're not allowed to take out that amount of money. And for that reason, they stopped my card. They blocked my card. And so I had to contact them in order to get it, to get the card working again. And contacting your bank again abroad can be quite difficult. The same thing happened to me with my credit card company. And this happened over days and days and days. I never actually got to the bottom of it as to why they blocked my card. It didn't seem to work in the majority of Brazilian banks, where even though I saw the Visa sign. Finally, I managed to get cash out at a Citibank. But this was after having to phone London, having to phone the banks in London, and repeatedly hold for about half an hour for every call. And so another bit of advice I've got for you, apart from obviously letting your bank know and your building and your credit card company know where you are on the planet at any given time, my other piece of advice is just to use Skype to make calls, because it's very, very cheap. I'd always used Skype in the past just to Skype people who are also on Skype. I've never used their call charging service, but it's very... I spoke to London repeatedly for hours and hours and hours, and it only cost me a few pounds. So that would be a good thing. Of course, you need the internet connection, but Wi-Fi is available everywhere. This is why you see people in cafes and free Wi-Fi zones talking to their computers, because Skype is such a good deal. The last thing you want to do is to, well, either use your mobile, obviously, because if you use your mobile, it's going to be a pound a minute or some outrageous charge. You don't want to use a local phone at the foreign country you're in, because that will be expensive. So I would just use Skype in these emergencies if you need to talk to, if you need to make a foreign call for an emergency. My final piece of advice is about luggage. Now, again, this might be an obvious piece of advice to people, but it wasn't obvious to me. Now, you've got to remember that everyone you'll ever talk to who's flown in aeroplanes at any given time in their life will have a story where they've lost their luggage, or, excuse me, the airline has lost their luggage. Because it's happened to me 3 times already, and I'm not a big traveller. Everyone I've spoken to since I've been here has told me, oh, yes, I've lost my luggage. I've had my luggage lost as well. So Rule number three is put all the essential things in your hand luggage. Okay, so essential items, what are they? Obviously, if you're running your business, the good old laptop comes with you into the cabin. You take it in your hand luggage. Now, I did that, but did I take the adapter? No, I put the adapter in the luggage in the hold because I was thinking, I'll just use my laptop a little bit, a couple of hours on the aeroplane if I feel like it, or in the airports for my connecting flights. I won't bother with the adapter lead because it's long and bulky, and I don't want to carry that around with me in the aeroplane. Well, that was the biggest mistake I made because they lost my luggage, and of course I didn't have the use of the laptop because the battery had run out after I'd arrived in Brazil. So this was actually the worst thing that happened to me. Because I had to find a Mac adapter for my MacBook Pro, which is a couple of years old now. And Mac being Mac, they've got different adapters for different laptops, and they're not the most common thing that you'll find in Latin America, because not so many people use Macs, even less in Latin America, because the prices are quite high here for Apple products. And there was only one shop in Recife that I found that sold adapters, and thank God I found it, because the airline, and I've got to tell you which airline it is, it was TAP Air Portugal that lost my bags. They didn't return them for 5 days, so getting that adapter and getting my laptop working was the most important thing. The other thing to remember is if you have any sort of medication, or any sort of essentials. I mean, for different people, the essentials will be different things. But for me, it'll be the laptop and the adapter for that. Maybe the adapter for your phone as well. You know, you've just got to have everything that needs power. You've got to bring the adapters with you in your hand luggage, and also any medication that you might be on, or any essential goods that you need to take with you when you're going abroad. Everything else, clothes, things that you wash yourself with, that goes in the suitcase because you can buy that anywhere, and it's no problem at all. So there's my last piece of advice for traveling abroad while you're working on your own business. Okay, so I'm trying a little cymbal music segue bit there to divide the different sections of the podcast. Please let me know if this is absolutely dreadful or it's going well. It's very difficult to tell when you're sitting in an apartment building in Brazil and talking into your computer. Anyway, this next segment is about holiday reading material, or just reading material, because I sent a shout out on my Facebook page for everyone to just recommend any books that they've been reading recently, as I was a bit short of reading material before I went away. Thank you very much for everyone who contributed to this on my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/robcubbon.com, spelt out. Bit of a rubbish Facebook page URL there. That's because some bloke who was called Rob Coven had already taken Rob Coven. Can you believe it? But there we go. So I just thought I'd run a few of these suggestions through with you. Some of them I've read, some of them I haven't yet. Little bit of a problem is that Amazon is not paying tax in the UK, and I thought, well, my God, if there's anything I should I should boycott a company for, and that's not paying tax. I mean, God, you've got to pay at least 20-25% tax, at least, if you're a business, I think. I think it's just wrong if you don't. But I don't want to get too ranty and political there, but I just am boycotting Amazon for the time being. Tara Roskell of graphicdesignblog.co.uk, who's been on this podcast before, wrote to me and said, just try play.com. I haven't got round to that yet, but if you want to boycott Amazon because they're not paying any tax, you can go to play.com, and God knows, they probably don't pay any tax either. So here we are in no particular order. First of all, Jackie Lindo suggests a couple of books. Well, the first is a series called The Halo by Alexandra Adornetto. That is for young adults. And also World War Z, I assume it's pronounced, by Max Brooks, which is a sort of zombie future war novel. Both of which were fiction, of course, and I didn't specify whether I wanted fiction or business or non-fiction books, so I got everything, which was great because I'm interested in everything. Secondly, we have Kathy Ebling, who recommended Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us by Daniel H. Pink. I'd never heard of this book, and it looks absolutely fantastic for us who run businesses. It teaches us the secret to high performance and satisfaction in today's world is the deeply human need to direct our lives, to learn, to create new things, and to do better by ourselves and the world. Sounds good. Along the way, Daniel H. Pink takes us to companies that are enlisting new approaches to motivation and introduce us to scientists and entrepreneurs who are pointing a bold way forward. So, I'm quite interested in that one, Kathy. Thank you very much. That's Drive by Daniel H. Pink. Now, Mark, I hope I'm going to get your name right here. Mark Narrison, who's a designer from the UK, who is a friend of the blog, and thank you very much, Mark, for your comments in the past, if you're listening. Mark suggested It's Not How Good You Are, But How Good You Want to Be by Paul Arden. And Paul Arden is an advertising guru. So I guess that book is about advertising as well. So that's gone on my wish list, Mark. It might have gone on my wish list, but doesn't mean to say I'm going to buy it with Amazon. Thanks a lot for that one. Moving on, Martin Edwards, another great commenter on the blog. Thank you, Martin. He came up with The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, which is a book I have read, so I should be able to explain it to you. And if you haven't read The Power of Now, I would definitely recommend it. I'm sure there's a lot of other great books out there on a similar subject. It's self-improvement / mysticism / taking the best bits out of all the religious texts of the world. So Eckhart Tolle explains how there is only ever one time in the universe, and that is now. When you think about it, the past and the future don't really exist, because when you're in the past or when you're in the future, that's now then anyway, isn't it? So all you need, you don't really want to bother about worrying about what you did in the past. You don't want to worry about what's going to happen in the future. You've got to make the most of the present moment. I'm condensing the book down into a few seconds here, but obviously that's not going to tell you very much, but I enjoyed reading it, and I would recommend it to everyone else as well. So that's The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. So on to Tara now, Tara Ruskell, who I mentioned earlier. She recommended three books. One Simple Idea by Stephen Key. And Tara is very interested in invention and what to do when you've invented something and how to take it to market. And I think that book is about that as well. And her second book as well, Launch by Michael Steisner, is also along the same lines. Her third book that she recommended to me really did interest me. I'm not saying the other two didn't. Was The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. Not sure if I've pronounced that correctly, but Tara describes that as pop psychology. But I've looked into it, and it looks very interesting. Again, if you're in the advertising, marketing, online business world, I think The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg could teach you an awful lot there. So I look forward to dipping in there. John Taylor recommended a book by his sister, Kerry Dwyer, which I have favourited on Facebook, so hopefully I'll be getting around to that at some stage. Moving on, we've got Heidi K. Addison-Beyer. Thanks a lot, Heidi. She came up with three suggestions, and they were all very interesting in their own way. First of all, actually, was the most interesting for me now that I'm in Brazil. It was called The Memory of Fire by Eduardo Galeano, who was exiled from his native Uruguay during the country's military dictatorship. And I'm sitting in Brazil here now, who suffered a military dictatorship at a similar time to Uruguay, probably, because a lot of Latin America did have dictatorships during the 60s, 70s and 80s. Brazil only became a democracy again in the early 80s, which is quite incredible now that you're here. I'm going to speak a little bit about Brazil, more about Brazil towards the end of this podcast, but Memory of Fire Summary by Eduardo Galeano talks about the military dictatorship as well as the involvement of the United States of America in the Latin American countries, which again is something that I have heard a lot about in Brazil. Heidi's two other recommendations are the Boat Boudica series by Manda Scott. I believe these are historical novels about Boudica, or Boadicea, however you like to pronounce her. She was a British Celtic queen who tried to rumble out the Romans 2,000 years ago out of Britain. So that looks good. There's four books in that series. And lastly, Heidi recommends Kim Harrison, who is an author in the fantasy genre. And finally, Marco McCool recommended three books on Buddhism. Thanks a lot, Marco, because I love to read books about Buddhism. I've read so many already. I can't believe you managed to recommend three that I'd never even heard of. I'm going to mention them all now, even though some of the authors have funny, impronounceable names. I've made so many mistakes in this podcast already. I don't think it really matters. But these sound great. First of all, published by Coulston. I can't have even got that right. Actually, published by Coulston, The Buddha in Daily Life, An Introduction to the Buddhism of Nichiren Daishonin. I'm sorry about that. Next up, Buddha in Your Mirror, Practical Buddhism and the Secret Search for Self by Woody Hochswender. Thanks a lot for that. I'll make sure that I include all these books in the show notes for the podcast, by the way, so don't worry about these terrible, impronounceable pronunciations that I'm giving you. Finally, The Buddha, Jeff and Me, A Modern Story by Edward Canfor Dumas. So, there we are. Three books on Buddhism to wrap up this section on the books that were recommended to me by my Facebook friends. Thanks very much, guys. Okay, so it doesn't seem right that I should leave this podcast without a discussion about Brazil, considering this is where I am. And what am I doing here? Why Brazil? And I'll tell you a bit about the country. And of course, I don't want to pretend I'm anything other than a Brazilian sort of beginner in all this. I'm not an expert, but I have been to the country four times, and I mentioned the military dictatorship earlier. So I'll just explain a little bit about what I know about Brazil and how it's changed over the years. Amazing, as I was saying earlier, to think that in the early 80s it was a dictatorship. Its current constitution only dates from 1988, during which the civilian governments initially were very unstable. There was hyperinflation. I met several people who've talked about the hyperinflation. Inflation in three digits. Can you imagine that? That means people queuing on Monday mornings in the supermarkets trying to get at the products before a new price was stamped on them, because every Monday the price would go up. It's inflation that people like me can't really understand, and it had a great deal of an effect on the country, because people, even to this day, they don't tend to save money. And if they do save it, they put it in property. Or there was also a habit that Brazilians had of investing money in dollars, in the US dollar, because they didn't trust their own currency. Obviously, things have changed a bit now. I don't know how much the military dictatorship did affect Brazil culturally. I've been to Russia and countries in Eastern Europe that were affected, I think, much more by the lack of freedom of speech. I mean, even in this country, there were famous musicians that were exiled. All sorts of people were exiled who had opinions that the dictatorship didn't like. Having said that, I honestly don't think that that has a huge, great bearing on Brazilian culture at the moment. I think it's much more to do with economics and the current state of play. I'm sure you must have heard of Brazil being one of the famous BRICS countries, which are obviously Brazil, Russia, India and China, large emerging developing countries with huge economies. Brazil actually has the sixth largest economy in the world by some calculations. It's very interesting because the first time I came here was in 1996-97. I was also here in the year 2000, and then again I was in here in 2001-2002 when the president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva was elected, and he stood for the Workers' Party, which was a very big deal in this country because I don't think there'd been a president that was from the left before. And Lula has, well, you couldn't say he was transformed the country, but certainly during his tenure as president, is when the Brazilian miracle took place. There's been continuous growth. He's not the president anymore. He served out two terms, and his successor was just the next leader of the Workers' Party. So there has been a certain amount of success in Brazil. Again, I have to stress, I am no Brazil expert. All I know is what people tell me when I come here. And one of the interesting things about Brazil is, well, the old joke used to be, Brazil is a country with great potential, and it always will be, which is a cruel joke, really, sort of trying to say that Brazil will never realise its full potential. And the funny thing is that the people I met, Brazilian and expats, used to bemoan the fact 10 or 12 years ago about how nobody saved any money, nobody bought anything on credit, all the money that people earned was in the black economy or grey economy, and nothing ever was ever paid in taxes, and corruption. Don't forget about corruption, because obviously corruption is a big issue here in Brazil. Funny that here I am 12 years later, and a lot of the things that people were moaning about, the issues that seem to need to be addressed, have begun to be addressed. People are paying more taxes. There's a drive against corruption, but corruption is still endemic in Brazilian society. But more importantly, the lower class people here in Brazil are buying more products. In fact, I think at least 20 million people have gone from being working class to being middle class in the last 10 or 12 years since I've been here. I mean, that's a huge shift in the economic demographic of the country. So things have changed. Have things stayed the same as well? Are there still bad things in this country? Well, of course they are, and I probably haven't lived here for long enough to be able to tell you the extent of the improvements. All I can say, as a foreigner who's always enjoyed coming here, how it's good to see that the country is improving economically as a whole. It would also be nice to see the country improve in sustainable ways, and And of course, you hope that there's not a bubble that's about to burst and some terrible other crisis that's going to hit this country, just like it's hit in the past and just like it's hit many other countries at the moment. But there we are on my segment on Brazilian economy and history. I'd also like to say that the reason I'm here is I've been here before is purely because I was working in a newspaper in London in the early 90s, very bored, and trying to become a designer. I wasn't even a designer in those days. I was working on the picture desk, and I used to go down to the canteens every lunch in the lunch break, and there was a Brazilian working, which was rare in those days, to even have a Brazilian in London working in a canteen. And for some unknown reason, he started to teach me Portuguese. And his name was Arian Nielsen Moraes. I've lost touch with him, unfortunately, but that is actually the reason I'm here. I wanted to go for a holiday to see if I could work and run my own design business while I'm away on holiday, with a view to doing more and more of this. Of course, this comes from I can't say anything about this without mentioning the 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss, and I'm sure a lot of you may have read that book. That comes into it, of course. I'm interested in gaining more passive income and running a successful business and being location independent. In other words, earning Western European, Northern American prices for my services whilst living a more cheap and sustainable lifestyle in another part of the world. So far so good. Brazil is an excellent country. I'd recommend anyone to come here. It's not as cheap as it used to be. They're not fantastic at speaking English, it has to be said, but it's a beautiful country with beautiful people, great culture, and lots of things to see and do. So this has been Rob Cullen from the Brazilian Tourist Office. No, just a joke. Rob here. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Something a little bit different, I have to say. I didn't really plan things to go this way, but anyway, here it is. And we'll see you next time. I've got 3 big guys, actually they're all men, lined up to be interviewed in subsequent podcasts. And they are big, big names, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy them. So I'll see you next time.